Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I think she's doing what she always does, which is trying to appease both sides and too scared to take a stance, and it's disappointing.
Alaska Democrats denounce Senator Lisa Murkowski's opposition to a federal abortion bill. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, May 11th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Manly Hot Springs residents assess the damage after the worst flooding in years.
A lot of people are hurting. A lot of people had really significant property damage.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska employers, did you know there is a no-cost, no-deductible way to bond at-risk employees, including ex-offenders and individuals recovering from drug addictions, even when your own insurer will not provide bonding? Information about Fidelity Bonding is available at your local Alaska Job Center or toll-free at 877-724-2539. Fidelity Bonding through the Alaska Department of Labor is 100% federally funded. This is an equal opportunity program. This message sponsored by the Department of Labor.
Senator Lisa Murkowski today helped block a Democratic bill that would preserve abortion rights into federal law. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Murkowski says she wants a federal statute that protects abortion the way that the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade opinion has for 5 decades. Talking to reporters at the entrance to the Senate chamber, Murkowski said the bill just went too far.
So I will be opposing the Democrats' bill that goes far beyond straight codification of Roe. And I will continue to try to work to ensure that we are protecting a woman's right to choose. Let me go in and vote here.
The bill needed 60 votes to advance past a Republican filibuster. It got just 49. The Alaska Democratic Party expressed their disapproval on Facebook by posting an image of Murkowski and a snake. Lindsay Kavanaugh is the party's executive director.
I think she's doing what she always does, which is trying to appease both sides and too scared to take a stance, and it's disappointing.
The Democrats' bill would have expanded on the rights established by Roe v. Wade. It would invalidate a series of state laws that add barriers to abortion. It would, for instance, not allow any abortion restrictions that don't include exceptions to preserve a patient's life or health. It also says that governments can't restrict a doctor's ability to prescribe abortion-inducing drugs. Among her objections to the Democratic bill, Murkowski says it does not protect health care providers who refuse to perform abortions on religious grounds. The bill's supporters dispute that. Murkowski and Senator Susan Collins of Maine are the only Republican senators who often vote for abortion rights. They have their own abortion rights bill. It adheres closely to Roe v. Wade and a 1992 decision called Planned Parenthood v. Casey. Senator Dan Sullivan, like all Republicans, voted not to advance the Democrats' abortion rights bill. His office didn't respond to an emailed question on the subject. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Senator Lisa Murkowski has a new Democratic challenger. Retired Palmer High School principal Pat Chesbro filed her candidacy today. Chesbro says Murkowski's position on abortion is one of the reasons she decided to get into the race.
I don't know that we can count on her in the choice issue. And you can count on me.
She's a member of the Democratic Party's Executive Committee and chair of the Mat-Su Democrats. Also challenging Murkowski is Republican Kelly Chewbacca, who opposes abortion rights and has the support of the state Republican Party. A Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson soldier died from injuries sustained in a bear attack yesterday while training in the Anchorage area, according to a statement from the base. The statement says the U.S. Army Alaska soldier was part of a small group in a military training area west of the Anchorage landfill. The Security Forces squadron initially responded to the bear attack, and by yesterday evening, wildlife troopers were reportedly searching for the bear. J-Bear says the soldier's name is being withheld until family is notified. Base public affairs officials had not released any new information on the bear attack as of this evening. Alaska's Senate has approved a budget that would provide $5,500 in payments to residents and draw on savings amid surging oil prices. The Senate Finance Committee originally proposed permanent fund dividends of roughly $2,600. That's half of the total draw from the state's sovereign wealth fund. The total proposed payout to residents rose to nearly $4,000 after the Senate approved an additional payment aimed at offsetting high energy costs. Senator Mike Schauer proposed hiking payouts further to a total of roughly $5,500. The Wasilla Republican said the $1.1 billion proposal would give the Senate room to negotiate the final figure with the House.
The history has been it gets negotiated down every single time. So that's the reason I'm saying that I want to see something higher.
Another big-ticket addition to the budget came on Tuesday when a coalition of senators proposed a $280 million package for improvements to the Port of Nome and Port of Alaska in Anchorage, along with road projects in the Mat-Su Borough. Democratic Senator Donnie Olson of Golovin said the state's share of matching funds for an Army Corps of Engineers plan to upgrade the Port of Nome was a critical investment.
The Corps found that this regional hub port at Nome has the unique opportunity to remote Alaska to improve the viability of numerous Alaska Native communities, strengthen the resiliency of the region, as well as serve as a critical outpost for national security.
The original budget proposed by the Finance Committee would have put away $1.2 billion in state savings accounts, but the plan that ultimately emerged from the Senate would take almost as much from savings, according to estimates from committee co-chair Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican. Senator Jesse Keel, a Juneau Democrat, said he could not support the budget.
I can't call myself a good steward of Alaskans' money if we're drawing on savings at $100 a barrel.
The budget passed by a 15-5 vote. It now heads to the House. Representatives could concur with the budget or appoint a conference committee to work out the differences between the two bodies' plans before sending the budget to the governor. Residents of Manly Hot Springs are beginning the process of recovering after suffering the worst flooding in over 50 years due to an ice jam on the Tanana River this past weekend. About 50 of the 80 or so people living in the community at the time of the flood were displaced by damage to their homes, but as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, locals are showing resilience in the face of disaster.
Manly Hot Springs resident Karina Dart has made the soaking pools at her business available to locals and flood response people free of charge. Dart says her property is on higher ground and was not damaged, but the flood's ugly aftermath is apparent throughout lower parts of town.
A lot of tipped over outhouses, a lot of knocked over heating oil, Greer tanks, a lot of, you know, just debris everywhere.
Dart says many homes and other structures suffered damage.
A lot of people are hurting. A lot of people had really significant property damage. They don't really know if it's safe to be in their homes. They can't really start to clean up very easily. The state is not, you know, telling them that they can't. But of course, if they do, they're facing potential sewage and fuel contamination risks.
Dart says the State Department of Environmental Conservation is expected to have people in Manly Hot Springs today to help with assessments and cleanup. Dart says there's some uncertainty about how to proceed with cleanup and repairs.
What is appropriate as a community response versus what we should wait on for organizations to assist us with and what level they are able to assist us.
Dart credits locals for taking care of those displaced by the flood and quick action to restore essential services like electricity and communications.
Staggeringly quickly because of the efforts of our local power workers. I mean, you know, this is a resilient town. Bush Alaska, rural Alaska is resilient by nature. So, yeah, no, I don't think we're done here. I don't think anybody wants to leave.
There are GoFundMe pages to help with Manly Hot Springs flood recovery. The local tribal government is aiding flood victims in conjunction with the Tanana Chiefs Conference. TCC Chief and Chairman Brian Ridley says the organization has worked with the tribe to address immediate needs.
We quickly put together a shipment that we got out to them this weekend, and then we just followed up with a second larger shipment, basic food and water that they were asking for to be able to get by for a few days.
Ridley says TCC will fall into more of a support role as state emergency managers take over the flood response and recovery operations with help from the Red Cross.
One of the things with any event like this is having an organized response so that I'm not doing the same thing that Red Cross is doing, and they're not doing the same thing the state's doing.
Ridley stresses that there's still a long way to go in terms of flood risk in the broader TCC region as breakup progresses along the Yukon and other interior rivers. The state is responding to active flooding from ice jams on the Yukon River at Circle and on the Kuskokwim River at McGrath. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Bristol Bay artist honors missing and murdered Alaska Native people.
You don't just forget, and you don't just put those stories down once you know them. Like, I will never forget those stories.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's unique approach to mental health funding is improving the lives of Alaskans who experience behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority has a responsibility to generate revenue from its 1 million acres of land and the resources they contain. The trust uses this revenue to help fund statewide programs and initiatives that positively impact trust beneficiaries. To learn more, visit alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
A first-of-its-kind federal study of Native American boarding schools that for over a century sought to assimilate Indigenous children into white society has identified more than 500 student deaths at the institutions so far. But officials expect that figure to grow exponentially as research continues. The Interior Department report released today expands to more than 400 the number of schools that were known to have operated across the U.S. for 150 years. They emerged in the early 19th century and continued in some cases until the late 1960s. The agency says a second volume of the report will cover burial sites and the boarding school's impacts on Indigenous communities. After lengthy debate last night, the Anchorage Assembly narrowly approved putting roughly $6.2 million toward the construction of a navigation center and shelter to address the city's homelessness crisis. Six Assembly members voted in favor and four were opposed. The new shelter will be in East Anchorage and is a key part of the city's plan to close the mass shelter set up at the Sullivan Arena at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Officials with Mayor Dave Bronson's administration say they plan to stop using the arena as a shelter by the end of June. The proposal for the new shelter drew concerns from the public and most Assembly members at last night's meeting. Assemblymember Pete Peterson questioned how the city would be able to recruit qualified workers to operate the navigation center in time for it to open.
I worry that even if the shelter is built, will we have the people to actually run it, to make it function the way it should? Just moving the people over that have been running Sullivan, I don't know if that is going to be a solution, a long-term solution to making the navigation center work.
Bronson officials have estimated that the new shelter will be open by late July. South Anchorage Assembly member Randy Sult asked Larry Baker, a consultant with the city, what would happen if the funding wasn't approved.
I can't answer that question because I don't know, because it was an integral part of the facilitation group that we collectively agreed that this was a necessary part, a necessary function in order to carry out the facilitation plan.
In the final minutes ahead of the vote, member Felix Rivera urged support for the funding.
What we have before us today, in my opinion, is the best possible plan that we could come up with considering the current set of circumstances that we have. Despite all of the unknowns, unanswered questions, and frustrations, which I share.
Rivera voted in favor of the shelter funding along with Sult, Suzanne LaFrance, Kevin Cross, Cameron Perez-Verdia, and Jamie Allard. Peterson voted against the funding along with Forrest Dunbar, Chris Constant, and Austin Quinn Davidson. The shelter and navigation center are planned for the corner of Tudor and Elmore Roads. The shelter has a capacity of 150 beds with a surge capacity of 200. In total, Bronson's administration has estimated the project costing just under $12 million, with another $1.5 million to furnish it. In 2018, Bristol Bay artist Amber Webb created a cusbuck to remember Alaska Native people who went missing or were murdered. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports on how the project has grown into an international call for action. And a note for listeners, this story mentions violence and sexual assault.
At the Chukuyung Tribal Council building in Dillingham, middle school students danced to honor lost community members. It was Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Awareness Day. In public places around town, red dresses hung with small posters that offered statistics on Indigenous people who are murdered or missing. Outside Kinakanak Hospital, dozens of staff wore red to recognize those who face that violence.
Everybody hold hands and circle.
They joined hands for a moment of silence. Then organizer Tiffany Webb spoke. She said that in 2016, more than 5,000 women and girls were reported murdered or missing in the United States, and just 116 cases were logged with the Department of Justice.
We are targeted at an astonishingly high rate.
Her sister, Yupik artist Amber Webb, works to address systemic racism and sexism through her art. In 2018, she started a project to address the issue directly.
It was actually on New Year's, and there was a story on the news of a lady that had been killed, and I decided that day to go buy some sheets from a thrift store and start the Gusbuck project and do a prototype.
Webb used those sheets to sew an enormous Gusbuck, a traditional overshirt with a hood and a large front pocket. Then she used a permanent marker to draw the faces of more than a dozen Alaska Native women who had gone missing or were killed. People started paying attention to the project. Webb won an artist grant through the Rasmussen Foundation and used that money to create a larger 13-foot Gusbuck that will be part of a national art show this year. Webb's latest Gusbuck features more than 250 Native women and girls from across Alaska, Canada, and the rest of the U.S. She read everything she could find about them.
I would spend about maybe like 2 to 6 hours drawing their portrait with Sharpie on this garment. Sometimes I didn't feel anything. You know, I would be sad, but I wouldn't feel like super intensely like nauseous. But then sometimes I would get like physically ill. And I never really knew which portraits would do that.
There is a historic and pervasive lack of data on MMIP throughout the country. The Chukuyung Tribal Council is working to fill the data void on missing and murdered Indigenous people from Bristol Bay. It documented 31 cases of people from the region who went missing or were murdered between 1980 and 2021. Tribal Administrator Courtney Carty says there have been additional cases since then. Alaska Native and Native American people are disproportionately more likely to face violence in their lifetime. According to a report from the Department of Justice, Native men and women experience similar rates of violence, but in different ways. Both men and women experience similar rates of psychological aggression, but it's more likely that women will experience sexual violence and stalking. Webb has reflected a lot on the emotional and physical toll of documenting these stories.
I don't think I understood at the time how much of an impact that would have on my health into the future, because you don't just forget and you don't just put those stories down once you know them. Like, I will never forget those stories.
Webb says the Gusbuck Project is a way for her to tackle the issue, building on a movement that has been growing for years in the U.S. and Canada.
It was a way to center the topic without asking people's relatives to do all that emotional labor over and over again to talk about their loved ones when that's really challenging. It's painful, you know. And because they're all hand-drawn portraits, I think it was a way to give women a respectful amount of anonymity while also acknowledging what happened to them.
Webb says she's amazed at the response to the Gusbuck Project. The Department of Justice included images from the garment in a video on MMIP. The Gusbuck was also hung in the state capitol in Juneau during testimony on a federal law aimed at addressing crimes against Indigenous people. Webb's Gusbuck is part of a national art show that opens in June. It's called Protection, Adaptation, and Resistance. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
And if you need to talk with someone, contact Strong Hearts Native Helpline at 8447-NATIVE or the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center at 907-328-3990. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children also offers resources to help families looking for a missing child.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline since 1977, from Prudhoe Bay to the Port of Valdez. Annie Wright Schools, located in Tacoma, Washington, whose mission is to create a strong community that cultivates individual learners to become well-educated, creative, and responsible citizens for a global society. There is a virtual preview of the school, the faculty, and campus for high school students seeking to explore international baccalaureate academics, arts, and athletics at aw.org/Alaska. This message sponsored by Annie Wright Schools.
The search continues for 7-year-old Sawyer Sipola, who went missing near his home in a heavily wooded area of Kodiak Island on Saturday afternoon. Sipola is autistic, and searchers were told he responds to the name Brigadier or vocal howling. He also answers to the phrase, "Come on in." Nearly 1,000 volunteers have searched for the boy since he was reported missing, along with Alaska State Troopers, local law enforcement, military members, and canine searchers from Anchorage and the Mat-Su region. Troopers say Sipola was last seen wearing gray pants, an Under Armour brand camouflage hoodie, and hiking boots when he disappeared. Anyone who thinks they may have seen him should call the Alaska State Troopers in Kodiak. Ballots have been mailed for the special primary election to fill Alaska's lone U.S. House seat left vacant after the death of Representative Don Young. Voters will choose one candidate from a field of 48. State Division of Elections Director Gail Finumiai says it's important voters read all of the instructions before casting their ballot.
Vote your ballot, get it back, make sure you sign, provide an identifier and have it witnessed, and get it postmarked on or before Election Day. There's no postage required.
If you make a mistake, Finumiai says voters can contact any Division of Elections office for assistance or to request a replacement ballot.
So if someone makes a mistake on their ballot, their by-mail ballot, and does not have an opportunity to ask for a replacement ballot, they can draw a line through their mistake and write no, and then go and fill in the oval of their correct choice.
In addition to returning ballots by mail, she says ballots can also be cast or dropped off at the Division of Elections offices located in Juneau, Anchorage, Wasilla, Fairbanks, and Nome. Mailed-in ballots must be postmarked by June 11th and received by June 21st. Finumiai says ballot counting will begin on Election Day and completed on June 21st. Under Alaska's new ranked choice voting system, the top four candidates will appear on the final special election ballot. That election will be held August 16th, the same day as the regular primary election. Registration for the special primary election is still open, but the deadline is tomorrow. A group of Un-Alaskans marched in support of women's abortion rights on Sunday. It was in reaction to the recently leaked draft opinion from Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito that indicates Roe v. Wade is on the brink of being repealed. KUCB's Theo Greenlee was at the march, and he has this report.
Around a dozen people have gathered downtown at Chief Alexei Courthouse to march in support of abortion rights.
It's Mother's Day. What better day to come out and support
mothers who choose to become mothers, women who do not choose motherhood, all different kinds of families.
Megan Faniff organized the march. She says she organized the protest as a way to defend a woman's right to make decisions about her body. She says she wasn't surprised by the leaked opinion, but still deeply upset by it.
I am not angry. I'm livid, and I will continue to be livid until the federal government makes abortion into the law, and that cannot be changed.
Unalaska resident Tammy Fowler Pound shares Faniff's anger.
I'm concerned about young women across this nation being put in situations that are going to be difficult for them, regardless of why they might need or want an abortion. It doesn't matter.
Many of the marchers held signs with slogans like "Keep abortion safe, legal, and accessible," and "Women's rights are human rights."
My sign here says "Fishermen for Women's Rights." So I think it's important for the fishermen community to voice what they think is right and wrong.
Yeah, I got a sign here that says "Not Going Back" and has an image of a coat hanger on there. And I think it really depicts where we would go if all this did go through and they took that right away from people to choose. I think abortions, back alley abortions, would still be happening all over the place, and that's definitely not a good thing.
The march was peaceful as the participants made the mile-long walk to City Hall, and they didn't encounter any counter-protests. Abortion is legally protected by the state constitution in Alaska, but some anti-abortion advocates see the prospect of an overturned Roe as their chance to impose limits. Some conservative advocates and politicians are urging Alaskans to vote for a constitutional convention in November, in part to limit abortion in the state. The U.S. Supreme Court is expected to release its final opinion on the case that could overturn Roe v. Wade sometime before June. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
A group of champion powerlifters have started training for this summer's Special Olympics in Kodiak. The powerlifting event kicks off what will be a busy competition schedule for the athletes. KMXT's Dylan Simard reports.
70 athletes from Alaska will be participating in this summer's Special Olympics, and they still have a few weeks to go. The games start on June 5th. Kodiak Special Olympics powerlifting coach Lindsay Knight owns Kodiak Athletic Club. He's been meeting with his team twice weekly at his gym to prepare them for the upcoming event.
It's in Orlando, and it's at the Disney Resorts. So we're going to be powerlifting at the ESPN Sports Center. It's going to be amazing.
Six powerlifters from Kodiak train with Knight, and several of his athletes have taken home medals in previous years at National Special Olympics powerlifting events. The team is hoping for more this year. After the national competition in Orlando, the team heads back to Alaska for the state's Special Olympics powerlifting event. Knight says he and his athletes are going to be busy.
I'll worry about the state team when when we get. I've learned to just do one contest at a time. So right now we're focused on USA. But no, we'll do pretty good.
According to Knight, the best way to support the Kodiak Special Olympics team is to donate. Torch runs around the state take place in late May and raise money for the Special Olympics teams in the communities in which they're hosted. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Tegan Hanlon and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, Kirsten Dobroth and Dylan Simard in Kodiak, and Theo Greenlee in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.